Hello and welcome. Today we're chatting with you about WWDC 2023. This is a LinkedIn Live. We've got two of the founders, co-founders of Singular with us today. We've got Gadi Eliashiv, we've got Aran Friedman, CEO and CTO, and we're going to chat about everything that's going on. We're going to talk about Scan 5. We're going to talk about Privacy Manifest. We're going to talk about Private Relay, enhanced private browsing, all this stuff, what it means for app developers, what it means for marketers. Everything. Going to give a few moments for people to pop in, come in, grab their coffee, settle down, all that stuff. I guess while we're waiting like 3 minutes for people to come in here, Aran, I'm going to ask you right off the top, are you going to buy the new Apple Vision Pro?
Oh, definitely. I'm not sure if I'm going to be kind of the main use case, but I'm just like, I have to like experience it myself and have it at home. I'm definitely an Apple fanboy, unfortunately.
Wow, love it. Gadi, are you going to buy one?
Yeah, I already put that gif of what's his name from Futurama. He says, just shut up and take my money. I already put that gif in the company Slack channel, so yes.
Yeah. I'm the kind of guy who's bought pretty much every single Oculus Quest and now Meta Quest that they've ever released, right? And I didn't buy the Pro. That's one that I've skipped out on. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to buy this too. It just looks so amazing. Hopefully we won't be disappointed in real life. But the feedback from people who have touched it, felt it, played with it only for 30 minutes is that it exceeded their expectations. So that's good. Excellent. If you're just joining us right now, this is not actually a LinkedIn Live about Apple Vision One. We're not talking about VR or the metaverse, not very much at least. This is actually about WWDC 2023 and all the privacy stuff that Apple released. And I think we're going to jump into it. We're going to dive into it right now. We're with two experts. We've got Aran Friedman. He's the CTO and co-founder of Singular. We've got Gadi Eliashiv. He's the CEO and co-founder of Singular. And we're going to dive into all the privacy stuff. Maybe, Gadi, we'll kick off with you. Scan 5, what the heck? Scan 4 is not even really out there right now. We're jumping into Scan 5. What's going on?
Yeah. So the reality is we don't know much, right? All we know is that there was a glimpse of Scan 5.0 in one of the sessions, and you know, folks are taking screenshots. There was another small mention in, I think it was the State of the Union or the platform or something. And basically they said that Scan 5 is coming later this year and it's going to support re-engagements, and which is not as exciting as maybe some folks thought. It's going to enable retargeting. So it's just going to support attributing retargeting.
I was so excited when I saw that. Oh, wow, cool. Are there some audiences? Is there something nice happening? You know, no, it's just retargeting attribution, re-engagement attribution. It's just all your ads that are out there. And if somebody already was using your app or already has your app, now you'll know. Okay, well, it's something, but it's not as much as I was hoping for. Aran, any other thoughts on that?
I think I'm a bit more excited about this than you, John. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we obviously work with many customers like across different verticals. And we did hear about like a pretty major gap with Scan for advertisers who have large user bases. Now, if you think about it, like before like ATT, when you had like IDFA phase and all that, you could essentially know when you're showing ads for existing users and you can blacklist users from those ads and focusing only on new installs. And now with Scan, you can't really do that. Like literally because you don't have IDFAs, you might be showing tons of ads for users who actually already have your app. And because Scan only works based on installs or reinstalls, then you have no way today to really know about it. And we've heard about, you know, we have a customer, for example, in Korea. They basically say they're kind of like the Amazon shopping of Korea. They're installed in 90% of the devices there. They're saying like, we don't have app install campaigns. It's irrelevant for us. We only have engagement campaigns. You know what? They barely get any Scan postbacks at all, right? They feel that this mechanism is irrelevant for them. So now when they actually have some visibility to how many re-engagements are coming from Scan, they feel that can be powerful for their use case, right? So yes, probably not relevant if you're not doing any retargeting or re-engagement measurement, not helping around kind of the retargeting kind of optimization part, but getting more visibility to how many of your existing users are actually clicking your ads or you had none, and seeing kind of whether it affects kind of your engagement. I think that can be a pretty powerful kind of features.
Well, that's wonderful. That's great. It sounds better for big boys than startups, but yeah, it does sound great. Gaudi, let's dive into the meat of some of the major changes. We know there's privacy manifests, there's required reason APIs, there's tracking domains and stuff like that. These seem to be some pretty significant changes. Maybe let's kick off with privacy manifests.
John, can I say just one more thing on the previous point? Sorry.
Yep.
I know we got to move on, but there was a discussion we had about, does this impact deep linking in any way? Because in a way, you could use deep linking today to understand, but I think there's a technical challenge of how do you deploy a campaign that should use scan or deep linking? You don't even know if the app, the app installed. And even if you do that, the question is, is this a step for Apple to start maybe touching deep linking or removing them? Because if you think about it, like you could use deep linking to know that somebody clicked on an ad from one app and went to your app and stuff like that, right? You could pass parameters. So there's been some discussion on that. And maybe, you know, I agree with Ron that this is nice, but maybe the only downside is that, let's say you run a campaign and you see that you have a lot of re-engagements. What do you do about that? Do you shut down that campaign? I mean, you still can't weed them out. You can't filter them out. So I don't know. Ron, what do you think? I mean, you get the stats, but it's not like you can necessarily act on it, right?
Yeah, and I think I'm of the opinion that kind of the improvement on Scan 5 and the re-engagement support doesn't necessarily mean that Apple plans to like block deep linking or something like that. I think that wouldn't make much sense. I mean, it would hurt essentially the customer, the user experience, which is something that Apple really cares about. But I do think that, again, like using deep linking for measurement is essentially a different way, or kind of it negates kind of Apple's intention behind SCAD. We're trying to cover all the measurement use cases and flows, right, to support any kind of these flows. So it's possible, you're right, to do measurement based on deep linking, but it's still a gap in SCAN that you can't do measurement on deep linking. And I think that's kind of the key gap that you're trying to just like check the box there, which is good news at the end of the day.
Good. Okay, privacy manifests. Gaudi, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, so as you know, there's something called nutrition labels for apps to kind of declare what access they have, what, you know, privacy related things they touch, I don't know, what permissions they need, how they use your data, etc. And, you know, we have a ton of content on that. I'm sure, you know, by now most apps have that. And Apple basically expanded that concept to SDKs. They came up with this idea that an SDK will write its own manifest of things it's going to touch or require. And then when you compile your app, when you actually build your app, all this information from the SDKs will be rolled up and combined into your app's essentially central privacy manifest or nutrition labels, etc. I think it makes a lot of sense. It also, first time that Apple actually recognizes SDKs as an entity, and that there's some process to you know, take data from that entity and push that into the app. It's not just some code library that gets compiled in, which is cool. The real interesting thing with these manifests on its own is it's just a cool mechanism, but I think the details here are what matters, with the fact that they've added certain privacy-related parameters in those manifests that are going to start impacting SDKs. Specifically, there's like a checkbox on, are you tracking or not, which we couldn't get a great answer on what this means on the UI, but there's like, I think it's called like NS privacy tracking enabled or something, right? True or false.
Yep.
And then there's another field for what are your tracking domains, which we'll get to in a second, but essentially I think that's where it gets interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm guessing that the definitions in Xcode are going to be the exact same definitions that they've released elsewhere, right? And tracking is defined as advertising related measurement, as well as sharing information across apps and domains. Aaron, what were your thoughts when you saw privacy manifests, SDK signing, and required reason APIs and all that stuff?
Yeah, I think overall it's as an SDK vendor, for us, it's great news. We've been having like sometimes like question on what should I fill in my privacy and nutrition report and how should I handle that? And all of this has been handled manually by the app developers with kind of our support. I think Privacy Manifest is a great way to, first of all, automate or like streamline a lot of this process. Definitely, if you think about like developers have like many SDKs and need to just like get the bottom line kind of answer. I think the SDK signature feature that they've kind of added, and just to kind of provide context, so they're kind of, we're probably kind of talk a bit about this later on, but again, the idea is to enable SDK vendors to sign the SDK with our signatures so the developers would know, okay, I'm signing an SDK by Singer specifically, and, you know, prevent the cases of like fake SDKs or SDK injections, which can be kind of suspicious. So these are great. Like, I think for us and for general SDK vendors, you know, streamlining these elements and having more kind of visibility and control in these areas.
We do have this concept now of tracking domains, Gotti. And so non-user initiated activity could be blocked to tracking domains. That has some implications for what you declare. It has some implications for what you say you're using some of these required use, required reason APIs, and it has implications for, you know, what endpoints you might have as a measurement vendor, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the biggest news probably in WWDC, way more interesting than Scan 5. I think this is Apple actually taking a step to ask SDKs to act nicely. And basically, with this setting, so let's talk about the setting. So it's something you put in your privacy manifest as an SDK developer, and you're supposed to declare what domains are performing tracking, and then the device will block access to these domains if there was no consent from the user. So if you never show the ATT pop-up, you can't access these domains. Now, when I say domains, it's not just, you know, google.com. You could actually define subdomains. So you could say, you know, I have a domain for tracking, like tracking.example.com, and I have a domain that doesn't do any tracking, so non-tracking.example.com. And then you can think about it. Let's say that you have one of your endpoints in your SDK or your subdomains receives IDFA. Then you're probably going to use this IDFA for tracking, right? Versus if you have an endpoint that only exists to serve SDN network or doesn't receive anything that is that can be used for tracking, then you would put that in the non-tracking subdomain. Now, as I say that, you can already challenge me and say, well, but all you need to do, you know, tracking in the form of fingerprinting is just an IP and a user agent, right? So because there's a challenge, because you could technically take any innocent request from the device and you could claim that it could somehow be maliciously turned into tracking, and then you can't put the entire device under the tracking domains, because then nothing would work unless you have opt-in, right? So that's the tricky part, where there's a lot of deliberations, right? I mean, in theory, this is a beautiful concept that Apple said, I'm going to take one step further to ensure that, you know, you can't, I mean, the way they describe it is they say to avoid accidents where the user didn't give consent and somehow they were tracked, which is a nice way of describing it. But I also think the more cynical way is like they're blocking forbidden use cases by doing that. But it still requires the developer of the SDK to know, and not even know, but to be honest about what URLs they're putting in that list. Mm-hmm. And then there's a question of, how is Apple going to check that? Are going to start auditing companies, et cetera? So I think there's a way they're going to do that, which, you know, we'll probably cover later with that privacy impacting SDKs. But yeah, that's kind of like a self-attestment, I don't know, kind of be honest kind of thing.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario, Aran, with required reason APIs as well. I think Apple's obviously has had a no fingerprinting policy for years, but with these required reason APIs, they know people are going to have an IP address, but they don't want data that is much more granular about a device or a person. Is that correct, Aran?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's in the some of the content out there about like the WWDC, the required reason API was considered kind of the fingerprinting kind of blocking mechanism. Also, Apple kind of framed it as kind of the mechanism to block fingerprinting. And their focus, for people who are kind of less familiar with this comment, again, including Privacy Manifest, it says that if you're using any specific APIs that could be used for fingerprinting in the device, then Apple requires a specific reason for why do you need that API. Because obviously they don't allow fingerprinting, so you need a legitimate reason to use that. And they kind of had these examples of like the disk storage size or the battery status API that might have some reasons for it, like the disk storage, if you have like a lot of content you want to download, might be a legitimate reason, so you can use it, but you need to tell us why, right? Otherwise, it would block that access for it. Now, I think if you think about like the shady kind of fingerprinting, relying on a lot of like device parameters and all of that, then yes, these can definitely block those fingerprinting. It shows again that Apple is making pushes towards blocking fingerprinting step by step. But as you said, some of the fingerprinting in the industry might happen server side, right? Based on network data, like IP addresses and such, right? Which are much softer, basically. Don't rely on really device deep kind of details, but more on kind of server side details, which can happen in our industry. So I think this kind of mechanism probably won't block a lot of these use cases today. It's kind of a step towards it. It shows kind of Apple's intention. And if I had to guess, I would say that maybe like in the next WWDC, maybe in a year from now, so forth, we also see that kind of being blocked, which is why I think we always kind of keep encouraging our own customers, focus on privacy preserving APIs, focusing on scan, on long-term solutions rather than legacy kind of on, you know, problematic kind of methodologies. But again, I think it's not necessarily kind of the silver bullet to block it, but just a step towards that strategy, in my opinion.
Yeah, and if you're trying to build a device graph, good luck. And if you're a flashlight app, that, you know, how much disk space do you have? Right? What is the status of your battery? Good luck with that. That is going away. One thing that was interesting, Gaudi, because we've talked about it for the past months, I would say, you know, will Apple take some things from Privacy Sandbox for Android? Will they take some inspiration from some of those things? And when we saw SDK signing, which you talked about briefly earlier, that almost felt a little bit like SDK runtime. It's not at all the same thing, obviously, but it felt like a little step towards it. What were your thoughts there when you saw that?
Yeah, I think it's not like a full-fledged, I think it's called what, SDK runtime, yeah. It seems like it's not a full-fledged solution, same way that Privacy Sandbox is a much broader concept than SDK network, right? But I think it's a very important step. Also, if you know, when you look at that presentation, they're not even coming from a privacy endpoint. I mean, privacy is one of it, but this is an even more basic concept. Like if you use open source for years now, you had signatures on the libraries you were using to make sure that they were originally delivered by the developer. And with SDKs, some of that information was missing. I mean, depending on a package manager, you could generate those signatures, but I think that, you know, they call it supply chain verification or something, right? They think of, you know, you're an app developer and you have a bunch of dependencies and these dependencies might have their own dependencies. And so as the app developer, you want to be assured that the components you use are the original components and not, you know, have been manipulated by somebody. So mm-hmm. It's a step in the right direction, but I don't know if I see an exact parallel. I don't know, Ron, what do you think comparing that? You've had more time playing with that SDK runtime in Android.
Yeah, for sure. I think it, to me, like both kind of directions seem very aligned. Like I think it's the first time in which it's kind of acknowledging or recognizing there's a huge ecosystem of like third-party SDKs out there. And they want to kind of make the progress towards like, you know, certifying them, reviewing them, making sure they're protected, and they're protecting kind of the developers as well. Again, as a company who has kind of SDKs, I think it's more than welcome. We've seen kind of the roadmap that's been done on kind of the SDK runtime in Android side. I think it's terrific for our customers and for kind of our like helping kind of manage these. And I think Apple is making again steps towards that too. Yeah. So overall, I think we're there. It's kind of still initial steps. Some of the details are also like will be known like later on. You kind of like thinking about the, we're probably going to talk about the privacy impacting SDKs and kind of the required APIs that they're reasonably required to get, that they're going to be published later. But I think you're building the infrastructure towards it, of like recognizing SDKs, certifying them, and that I think would be great for the industry.
That's a great segue, Aaron, and let's talk about that, this list of privacy impacting SDKs.
Okay, so one of the interesting, and again, this was mentioned as maybe like a sentence in the documentation and in session, but a very interesting one, is they kind of introduced the concept of what they call the privacy impacting SDKs. They're saying that Apple is saying that they're going to publish a list later on this year of specific SDKs which will be considered as privacy impacting. So essentially, and they didn't really like declare exactly what it means, but apparently, like SDKs who have a higher impact on user privacy in terms of tracking. So we can probably imagine it can include MMP SDKs, network SDKs, maybe analytics SDKs for various categories. Now, what they kind of said when we've had like multiple conversations with kind of Apple also in the Q&As and such, it seems like the current requirement from privacy impacting SDKs beyond just being in this public list is it would be required to have a privacy manifest. So we've talked about privacy manifests earlier, and this was actually a feature that is optional at the moment. They don't require every app or every SDK to have a privacy manifest. They definitely encourage it to streamline the process for privacy and nutrition labels and so forth, but privacy impacting SDKs would have it as a mandatory thing. So basically, as they outlined in the timeline, they said later this year, they're gonna publish the privacy impacting SDKs. You can imagine it's probably going to be a broad list like in the advertising ecosystem. And those SDKs would need to include a privacy manifest. By the way, we're already planning to do that because we think it's a bit of information for customers. And by spring 2024, they're going to require these SDKs to have those privacy manifests for the review process. So they also understand that there is a process towards getting that point, but that's kind of the intention behind it.
Yeah, the good news is that there's going to be a gradual rollout. So in 2023, you're going to start getting, people are going to start getting feedback from the review team to say, hey, this SDK needs to include it or not. One more thing that they'll require those privacy impacting SDKs is also to have a signature so that, you know, you make sure that it's really, I don't know, Facebook or Singular or whatever that deliver this SDK and not somebody else. And I think, you know, it makes sense. They basically, this is kind of their way to perhaps solve the problem in their eyes. So they're like, okay, if we have privacy manifesting SDKs, things would be better. Let's choose the top SDKs that we want to you know, let's prioritize the most important SDKs to use this first. So I think that's interesting. I agree to Ron, it's probably going to be a really broad list. And then the question is, how broad do they go? Like if you know, we open Safari on desktop and we browse to a bunch of websites. And today in, you know, ITP and what they identify as trackers is like half the internet. It's like all the CDPs are there, even frameworks like Shopify, like, you know, so many things are identified as potentially trackers. And so I wonder how Apple's going to build that list. They also mentioned somewhere that the OS is going to maintain a list of domains that seems to be tracking you. And the way they're probably going to do that is at the OS level, they're going to look for domains that are going to be accessed from multiple apps. So if you think about it, if there's an SDK with really wide distribution, it's likely could be a tracker, right? So that list is going to grow really fast. Google Analytics, Firebase could be one of them, right? Like any CDP that people use just as a pipe for events could be technically could be a tracker because it sees users across apps. So it'll be really interesting to see what Apple does. I mean, they mentioned that they're building that list of domains that does this. Maybe right now it's just only a developer tool in Xcode when you do instrumentation, but will they send that list to Apple or will they start doing it on device, probably on device, and start learning? And then is the next iteration what ITP does, right? So there's still a lot of open questions around that and how privacy impacting SDKs will play a part or not. I think it'll be interesting.
Very interesting indeed. What else? We've got some Relay stuff that Apple talked about. We have enhanced private browsing in Safari. Any comments you want to make on some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I could comment on the Relay session. So, the relays, you know, last year, I think it was 2 years ago, they announced Private Relay, right? Which was a service for subscribers of iCloud, iCloud Plus. I don't know what the name is, but the subscription service for iCloud. And essentially, this session was about how you as a developer could also use relays on your own. And they talked about how the operating system has support for two types of relays, something called Mask and another one called Oblivious HTTP. But what I also got from that presentation was a heavy focus on enterprise use cases. They kept saying, you could use this instead of VPN. It's better and it's lighter weight and it's easier to configure, etc. And at the end, I think they even showed a vendor like a Cisco or somebody that already offers, if you want to buy for your enterprise, like a Mask relay. So really what they're saying is, this is the tech we use in Private Relay. You can use it as well. And there's even open source stuff you could download. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. the question is, why? If I'm an app developer and I already pay for servers and I pay for everything, what's going to be the forcing function that's going to make me set up a relay server? And also, if you own the app, and you, like if you own the app and the servers that are the endpoint of the app, and you also own the relay servers, you realize there's a bit of a problem, because you could then, you know, it's like the opposite of what Tor does, right? Where you don't know what the endpoints are and there's like routing between nodes. And Apple says that. They say the best thing is when there's a third party that does that. So one theory, extreme scenario, is that they'll force certain apps to go through relays. I don't know if they can do that. Well, maybe they can. They can do anything, right? But they might say, and it's a theory, they might say, okay, these apps or these even endpoints or URLs, you guys have to go through a relay and you pay for it. And here's a list of approved vendors. And then these vendors will be made rich because everybody has to go to them and buy a proxy for some price. So I don't know. It's theories. It's unclear where relays are going to go, but they're definitely keep developing that concept.
And Aaron, we've got enhanced private browsing in Safari, stripping query strings off. Thoughts on that?
Yes, I think just to outline kind of the changes there. So there's a couple of components. First of all, if you're in incognito in Safari, like the private browsing mode, then yes, kind of they're going to strip any prompts from URLs that seem to be user specific. So things like click ID, your FBID and such, actually not touching UTM aggregate parameters. I mentioned an example, like a campaign ID, for example, that shows like which campaign the user came from. So those don't seem to be touched, but definitely affecting potentially like optimization for the networks. Now, some of the networks like Facebook already have protections against these, like some of these parameters already can be encrypted and kind of anonymized. So again, it's a bit like a cat and mouse game, but I think the key thing is it's mostly in private mode, like incognito, which typically doesn't you know, affect most of the users from most of the verticals out there, I would say. Another kind of point that I mentioned was this would also include links clicked from emails or messages in which these would be eliminated. And that, I think, is more interesting because, again, if you have the click IDs coming from your emails or messages, that can affect optimization. Again, if it's UTM parameters, things that leak more aggregated, I think that can still empower your attribution, see kind of the measurement per campaign, even on the email side or messages side. But if you're trying to get that user to user kind of tracking, that can be hurt by these channels. So I think overall for kind of attribution and aggregated measurement, less affecting, but more on kind of the user level basis, kind of a click ID basis, that can have a bigger impact on these channels.
Interesting, because if it's like in an email, that's potentially first party as well, right? You send emails out to people that you know in a lot of cases, not always. But anyways, we'll learn more about that as it goes. I want to sort of transition.
One question maybe on the email. Ahead. So yeah, I didn't notice the email thing. So essentially, I mean, they already killed impression tracking on emails, right? Because you have that pixel that would open and they killed that. And now you can't even do click tracking because a lot of these providers, they would put a unique, like you put a unique ID in the email link so you know who opened your emails. So even that's going to be disappearing.
I think that's the essential intention for like the click tracking for those email providers, but still enabling kind of aggregated measurement. So I think that's kind of the nuance there.
Isn't that like a massive functionality break for like tools like Braze or Pardot or any marketing automation, HubSpot, like, because, you know, so many people open emails on their phone in iOS, and then essentially, I don't know, I think
what they'll end up doing is encrypting all that stuff, and it'll be indistinguishable in between what is actual URL and what are parameters. And so, you know, you won't really be able to do that stuff.
Yeah, that's the cat and mouse. Yeah, one more thing I want to say about ITP. Yeah, if you've been tracking ITP, then the last few years was literally like a cat and mouse. But also, they are continuously making things more difficult, right? That's the one theme in ITP, is like things get harder and harder or better for privacy, depends how you look at it. So right now it's just incognito, but probably the future is, you know, they might, like we were debating, will they touch UTM params? Are they even allowed like to break such core functionality of the, you know, HTTP protocol? But they might do that. I don't know if they have any details on what they consider a good parameter versus a bad one. So like they show an example where campaign ID number 42, that's fine. But if you ran ads on like Google or Facebook, you know that their ad group ID is really long, and they might say, "Oh, that's a unique identifier." It's like, no, it's the ID of the sub campaign, right? The ad group. So, and they're going to start stripping it out. So, this could break a lot of stuff.
It could break a lot of stuff. Okay, I want to move to the second section, and I want to talk about two things. One, what does this all mean for the industry? And two, you know, what should app makers, developers, marketers do right now? We have about 10 minutes left. Gadi, talk about all these changes. And is this the end of fingerprinting? Is this the additional push to triple M, more reliance on scan? Contextualize these things for us.
Yeah. So first, I definitely think it's a step in the right direction. I think that it's the first time that Apple's asking SDK developers to do something, and I'm sure they're going to answer honestly. Like, we will answer honestly. We obviously respect our relationship with Apple, and that means that we'll probably start putting some domains that maybe are doing stuff that's obviously tracking under ATT, and we'll enforce that a bit more. I will say, in fingerprinting, there's still the challenge of, you know, stuff can happen in the back end in the most innocent use cases. Like let's say you open an app and you see an ad, you don't even think about it, but behind the scenes, there's an exchange that probably tells a bunch of DSPs that you're up for an impression and they need to bid on it. Even the fact that they are saying that this device ID is up for an impression, that's information that somebody could piece together and fingerprint. Like there's all these use cases you don't even think about. Right. So I don't know if it's going to be bulletproof, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And that's in regards to fingerprinting. I think what it will do, and it seems like every WWDC, people keep asking like, oh, that's the end of fingerprinting. And then other people are like, no, it's not the end of fingerprinting. There's always this debate. I think what they're doing is they're chipping away at it. And slowly, it's becoming more obvious that it's going to be useless at some point. We have been advocating against this from day one. I have to say that I'm surprised we're still in 2023 and it's still so prevalent. I thought Apple would do more things to get rid of it. My predictions was that it's going to be dead like 2 years ago and still not dead. So I'm not going to declare that it's dead because I've been wrong so many times. But I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. The good news is that, you know, as a vendor, we've invested heavily in SDK network, which we believe is the path forward. Not the only path. We're going to talk about MMM. Maybe Ron should cover that. But you know, we got to go with, you got to invest in what the OS is giving you. Scan 4 has a lot of functionality. Scan 5 is going to have even better functionality. And you know what? At the pace that they're running, Scan 6, 7, 8, let's see what these offer, right? I mean, it's nice that they're working and developing that, which was not obvious. Like for us, Scan 4 was the first step showing us that Apple's going to allow more functionality in their platform. So. So definitely more scan adoption, definitely more scrutiny and fingerprinting. And then I think it will even further accelerate folks looking for additional methods. I wouldn't even say alternative, because I'm not in the delusion that you can live without scan completely and just do aggregate media mix modeling. I think you'll need both. They're used for different things. But I think you will drive folks to look for multiple methods and alternative views.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. You said that Scan 4 was kind of the eye opener that, hey, Apple's adding features functionality here that's going to make it usable. We were shocked that Scan 5 was announced, and there's only one feature that they've announced for it. But maybe the reason that they've considered it Scan 5 is there's more there. There's more there that will be revealed in time. Aran, any big picture thoughts of what all this means?
No, I'm super aligned. I think any companies who rely on legacy, very convenient maybe, but legacy solutions like device level fingerprinting, device, whatever, just going to become harder and harder to rely on these. And like those cat and mouse games, like trying to find workarounds and risking kind of the business. I think it's possible to do, but I think it's going to get tougher. When you see that, like, the future gazing kind of companies who invest in the long-term frameworks like SK Network, like MediaMix modeling and other methodologies really, and kind of privacy safe frameworks are going to get more and more capabilities, more ways to just innovate there. So that's at least how I think about the future, and we'll see how things develop, but that's I think the big news of WWDC today.
Yeah, and that seems to be the plan as well, right? Sort of the yin and the yang of it, right? We'll make the one side harder and harder and harder, which is impacting privacy. We'll make the other side better and better and better, right? And so that's definitely the flow, definitely the movement. Okay, so
hopefully
app makers
get better faster, but that's
so like, does everybody.
Privacy is moving faster than Scan is, but
yep. So app makers, publishers, marketers have some new things to think about, some new things to add as they're just publishing an app, and some questions. If you look at what they should be doing right now, Gaudi, what are your thoughts?
As like the developers or?
Developers and marketers, pick one.
Yeah, I think they should definitely stay up to date with the news and talk to their partners. Like we, from our experience, have been a consultant for all of our customers because these changes are massive, right? And every year when WWDC, every vendor in the space rewrites their roadmap given whatever Apple announces. And because of where we are, we have to stay really close to the changes. So I guess what I'm saying to marketers, to developers, is use your trusted vendors to give you advice, because we probably spend 1,000x more time thinking about these things than each developer, because we have to. That's our job. That's our livelihood. So use us to figure out how to plan. The funny thing is, we literally just, what was it, like a week or two ago, we were talking to people about, get ready for Scan 4, like our SDK has been out. You got to make sure you update your app and talk to your partners. And now there's Scan 5. Well, not out yet, but it's coming soon. So this stuff's moving really fast. And but the market is, it takes time to adopt. And, we're barely 0% Scan 4 adoption as of this recording in June. I think that relying on your partners and use them and outsource questions to them, I think is a great strategy. It's what I would do. I would just go to Aran, if I were a developer, and just say, man, okay, tell me what this means and TLDR, and then how should I prep? And so I think that's my advice to developers.
I think that's been Aran's job the past 2 years, pretty much. Aran, what are your thoughts? And also maybe, What are your thoughts, and also maybe how MMP's roles are changing?
Wow, that's a big question. So I think maybe on the last question first. So I think the role of the MMPs didn't really change with the WWDC. Like inherently, where I would say that like the role as a measurement partner, and not just mobile, but as a measurement partner, is to provide you kind of the measurement of your marketing performance across our channels, across our platforms. And that definitely didn't change. Like, in fact, I think we're seeing getting more tools now with Scan 5 to measure it in a better way. I think our strategy, again, has been focused on the privacy framework. So we kind of got a bonus now with Scan 5, more capabilities to work with, while any MMPs who may be relying on legacy kind of frameworks or legacy kind of solutions are going to have a tougher time, for sure. So we're kind of just focusing on the future, and that's what we're going to do. But in essence, like, we're still going to consult and advise exactly as Scotty said to our customers, okay, how to navigate these, how to get the best data, best insight to see how you're performing. And yeah, and more concretely, maybe on kind of how to prepare. So from our side, we're definitely gonna release an iOS 17 compatible SDK, which would include a privacy manifest even before this list of privacy impacting SDKs is published, because we see its value. And we'll guide any customers who are kind of trying to understand, okay, what should they do also with any ID feeds that are collected? You need to keep in mind that you should also make sure that you're sending the ID feeds in the right place and separating kind of your domains appropriately, and provide those advice and updated SDK and help you kind of with that process.
And Gaudi, maybe close us off with some final thoughts, because you've heavily invested in Scan4, solutions for Scan in general, and Scan4 particularly. You'll do the same with Scan5. You just released a product for MMM, which is no configuration, out of the box, just works. Your data is already there. You know, easiest possible way to do MMM that you can imagine. Closing thoughts for the marketers on the call in terms of where Singular will be and what Singular will do as they work through this yet another transition, yet another evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, actually, I'll make two closing thoughts. One is, John, you usually have a habit in every webinar, LinkedIn Live, every time I meet you, you ask the participants if they can have one item as a wish list for Apple. And if Apple folks are listening, I want to make one request, which is make SDK developers a known entity in your review process. Have a dialogue with SDK developers. You've already recognized them as an entity, because now they have a manifest. But if you can have a review process with them, it would make so much sense. Like, why would you want to have a random app review team rejecting an app because some SDK that they've used is not up to code? You don't have to do it for every SDK. Maybe do it for the privacy impacting SDKs. Maybe do it for the ones that, you know, need it. But it makes so much sense. You'd have a dialogue with SDKs. You can also talk to them directly and tell them what you want to happen. This would help us, because it would create alignment in the industry. So please, Apple, spare a few more resources on the SDK review team. I think that would be great. And then we would all know that we're doing exactly what you want. And then there would be no confusion. And the app developers would be they would be happy, because it's like, okay, these SDKs are approved by Apple. We don't even need to care about this.
Known good, check mark, can yeah. use it, all
that,
good.
That would be yeah. awesome. So that's my ask out of Apple. And then it's funny, we're talking about Iran, and I was thinking of, you know how there was like Daenerys Targaryen, the first of her name. So I kind of wrote a stupid thing about Iran. I don't know if I should read it or not. but definitely we've been investing a lot in privacy. Iran has spent so much time with customers. Really, every time there's an adoption issue with Scan, we have folks in the company that could come in and help. And, you know, historically, if you think about it, as an MMP, our job was to help you have measurement infrastructure, to help you achieve success in ROI and campaigns. And I feel like with Scan, that role expanded, because it's difficult for folks to even start running campaigns, to get enough coverage, to get enough postbacks, to figure out what's wrong. These systems are not easy. Now, as parting words, where do I think Singular will be? We'll keep supporting you guys. Hopefully, we've demonstrated in the million hours of webinars and content and articles we wrote that we care about this topic greatly, and that we want to be a partner. You know, our customers have been phenomenal working with us and creating these amazing solutions. And so whatever changes will happen in the future, we are ready for them. In many ways, I think that I think we're already past sort of the peak of the breaking changes of privacy. And now we kind of know what's going to happen. And now it's more adapting to it. But I also think that this is a time where new solutions will start rising, like, you know, MMM, or if more folks are interested in that. There's a lot of forces in the market pushing for it, whether it's advertisers or even ad networks that want to look better. And maybe MMM will show in a different light, right? So definitely we're going to be with you in that journey help you succeed.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Iran. Thank you so much, Gaudi. Thank you, everybody who's watching and listening. We'll be publishing this in the Growth Masterminds podcast as well. It'll be on Singular's YouTube, and I think there just might be a blog recap of it on Singular's blog as well. Thank you for listening in, and have a great day.